Whale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, actually for the next 2 hours, they're going to be the views of Pastor Joe Schimmel, who's a good friend, who's put together a number of DVDs that we carry, including the They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls from Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And shortly before the election, Pastor Schimmel put out a DVD on Obama, the background of this man who was to become the president of the United States. And really, who is this man? What does he believe in? What does he really believe in? We hear some people claim that one fellow I heard speak this last weekend said he was over in communist Russia in the early 90s, and a hardcore communist function, a dignitary told him, a woman told him that there was a man named Barack Obama who would become the president of the United States. He was a black man. It was only a matter of time before he would become the president of the United States. Is somehow there a communist behind Obama? What does he really believe in as far as Christianity? He was recently in Turkey where he announced to the people he was speaking to, the United States is not a Christian nation. Well, that's funny because the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that America was a Christian nation. Not that everybody was Christian, but it was founded on Christian principles. And yet, of course, you know, President Obama has said we're not a Christian nation. So what does he believe about Christianity? He claims to have gone to a church for 20 years where the minister frequently made the phrase G.D. America, G.D. America. And, of course, they tried to defuse that by saying, well, he had an odd view. The minister had an odd view on race. Had nothing to do with race. It had to do with the hatred of America and everything this stands for. So who is this man? Well, Pastor Schimmel has put together the second version, a second DVD on President Obama, which I think that people must watch and must become informed about and must understand that there is an invisible force behind President Obama. Joe, did you get that article we sent you about written by Corrine McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson?
Yes, I appreciated that. I thought when you sent me an article, I thought it was going to be an expose kind of along the lines that we were talking about, but I was surprised it was from a New Ager exclaiming basically that Barack Obama is the spiritual light guiding us into the New Age, and which was right in harmony with our second video, which is just about ready, just about done. And I thought it was interesting because she's pretty much saying what Oprah Winfrey and some of the other supporters of Obama have been saying, looking at him more than just a man, but as a consolidation of the spiritual hopes and aspirations of the human race, the pinnacle of human evolution, spiritually speaking, that is going to guide us into the New Age, which biblically, there will be such a man, but it will be an imposter of the ultimate Christ, and that's not to say that we would believe that he is the Antichrist, but we do believe that he is part and parcel of a bigger movement that is leading the world to a world religion. And I think Dr. Stan, he's made some incredible strides in just his first 60, 70 days in office, just in the last couple of days, with regard to what has happened in Europe and then in Turkey. You're familiar, Dr. Stan, with some of the statements he made in Turkey? Have you heard about that?
Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and cover all of those.
Okay, I think it's amazing because, and we can get into, you know, where he fits in regard to the whole New Age movement and what have you, but...
Hold that thought, Joe. We're going to be back in just a moment or two, right after this break, right here at Radio Liberty. Joe, go right ahead.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Stan. I'm not going to probably cover, unless you want me to cover some of it, but In past interviews we've done, we've looked at a lot of his associations in the past, and we'll look at some as they relate to what's going on now, but I thought it was interesting because I was hoping to get part two done before the election, which we, with a thousand other responsibilities I have, I couldn't quite get it done, and it was quite amazing because we were really emphasizing in our interviews with you, and people can go back and look at those interviews months ago before the election, that he would be pushing a radical socialist agenda, also that there would be incredible steps made toward Islam. And even conservatives, the talking heads on the television, conservative talking heads on radio, many of them were saying, oh, no, what he's really going to do is push more of a moderate agenda. He's not going to really be, you know, not going to have a whole bunch of ambitions in this way. It would destroy him and what have you. And that contradicted the entire premise of where we saw him heading. And I just think it's amazing, Dr. Stan, that we're just, you know, just over 2 months into his presidency, two, 3 months into his presidency, and what he's done is absolutely unbelievable in regard to, you know, moving toward nationalizing the banks and creating a fascist kind of a corporate view of America. Even the New York Times recently ran an article talking about how Barack Obama is a lot like Hitler. And, you know, the New York Times is a internationalist, liberal, socialistic type newspaper, but it was comparing his recent moves to those of Adolf Hitler. And, of course, it was saying, well, he's not like Adolf Hitler in the sense of Holocaust and so forth, at least not yet, right? But he's very much doing what Adolf Hitler did in Nazi Germany, and those were actually good ideas. So it's amazing that even the liberal newspapers are drawing some interesting parallels, but he's definitely moving us toward a more socialistic, you know, more very much in the likeness of Hitler's type of socialism, where basically the government told the corporations what to do, you know? And also, in regard to Islam, he's moving with lightning speed. I mean, just after he was elected, the first television interview he did with an Islamic network, he basically got the guy from the USS, that bombed USS Cole, off the hook. He you're familiar as well that he made overtures and made a video, it's on YouTube, to Ahmadinejad, saying we're no threat to you. The Ayatollah came out the next day and said, well, there's no superpowers in our way now from developing our nuclear bombs. He's got an incredible attitude of appeasement, wanting to talk to Syria. All these incredible things that are happening are quite amazing.
Hold that thought, Joe. We'll be back here in just a moment with Pastor Joe Schimmel. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Pastor Joe is simply saying that it's amazing what has happened in just a few months that Barack Obama has been the President of the United States. His basic conciliatory aspect towards the Muslims and towards getting the gentleman who was responsible for the bombing of the Cole off. I mean, this man has been released, you know, and yet there's no question he was involved with the murder of a number of American servicemen aboard the USS Cole that was actually bombed, I think it was in Yemen, but the harbor there, certainly in the Persian Gulf, and certainly so many of the things that Obama is doing as far as nationalizing our banks, moving rapidly towards centralizing all power in the federal government in total violation of the Constitution, which he has supposedly sworn to uphold. So you pick up the story there.
Well, that's exactly what's going on in a nutshell. I mean, I'm holding up Newsweek, the latest copy of Newsweek, in my hand right now. I subscribe to it. I hate to give my money to him, but I like to keep up with what the enemy is doing on a lot of fronts. And a couple months ago, the front page was, you know, we are a socialist nation. Well, the front cover, and leave it to Newsweek to do this right before we celebrate the resurrection of Christ, it's the form of a cross, front cover, big red cross. It's actually words in the form of a cross, and the words state the decline and fall of Christian America, by John Meacham.
And I think it's so important that people understand that behind everything politically that's going on is this powerful spiritual force that hates Christianity. And that's, of course, why they put people on the Supreme Court to take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools and to create the chaotic situation. And certainly Newsweek and Time and U.S. News and World Report, they're all controlled basically by the same people. They hate Christianity. When you understand that, so much of what's going on really does make sense.
That's exactly right, and it's interesting. on the heels of, you know, we are a Muslim nation now and the decline and fall of Christian America. We have a picture in our new video of Barack Obama coming off an airplane with a book on the postmodern or the post-American world written by a Muslim, which basically is celebratory that the United States is going to basically morph into a new world order and just be equal among other nations, which is ultimately the end game. Because I believe, Dr. Stan, and I believe you have a similar conviction, that there's two things that stand in the way of the new world order, and that is corralling the United States of America into a place to where the citizenry lays down their weapons, they submit and say, you know, we're not going to stand up for the Constitution, we're going to morph into a new world order. And also Israel. Israel is a nation where for 30-plus years more UN resolutions were made against Israel than any other nation on the face of the earth. I ask people that don't really understand God's plan for Israel, why is it that the UN has more resolutions against Israel than any other nation in history? Obviously, Israel isn't running the United Nations. And Israel is that piece of real estate that just doesn't fit in the New World Order. And Christians don't fit in it either. So the main attack that we see from the New World Order folks are Christians that take their faith seriously. And Israel is a nation. Of course, there are Jews and professing Christians and Muslims and all sorts of people that are pro-New World Order because they are those things in name. They aren't biblical Jews or biblical Christians. But Islam is for a New World Order. It's for a New World Order that's headed by Islam. In fact, there's many Islamic surahs that talk about throughout the Quran that the end goal of Islam is the dominance of the entire world. And so it makes sense that the New World Order folks would seek to enlist foot soldiers when you have over a billion of them that are seeking to bring forth a New World Order in their image. And people wonder, they wonder, how come there's all these Hollywood movies year after year and Newsweek and what have you, Time and the establishment is so anti-Christian, but you rarely ever see a Hollywood movie coming against Islam. And I personally believe it's because with regard to the satanic forces that are behind this whole thing, and I have a strong biblical conviction, and I'm speaking not from the standpoint of a pastor, from the church I pastor. I'm speaking from the standpoint of a biblical Christian, from a citizen of America at this point, for our political action committee is called Last Defense. And I'm saying this in the context of, look at the nation we live in, and look at where it's headed, and when you think about it, we are under such attack from every level, and it's like, what kind of bedfellows, very strange bedfellows, for Muslims who will have the heads of many of the homosexuals that run Hollywood and are, you know, very anti-morality. Strange bedfellows that the Hollywood crowd would really kiss up to Islam when Islam is antithetical to so many of the so much of immorality in Hollywood. But the common denominator is the Hollywood crowd and the Islamic crowd are anti-Israel, anti-Jesus Christ, anti-the Christian church. That's what makes them such strange, alluring bedfellows for one another. But when they all get together, their new world order is going to be more of a new world disorder. But what's crazy to me right now, Dr. Stan, is we have Barack Obama talking about, you know, kind of encouraging Turkey to become part of the European Union, and most of the European Union nations wanting them to be assimilated, except I thought it was interesting. I was reading an article today that just said there's two countries that are having a hard time with it. Sarkozy of France spoke out to Obama and said, this is our business, because he's against, at this point, at least publicly, assimilating them into the EU.
Now that's Turkey, to bring in Turkey in. Yes, there are some of the countries over there really don't want to bring Turkey in.
Sorry, did I say another country?
What?
Did I not say Turkey?
Yes. I want just our listeners to
understand. Oh, yeah, okay,
right,
Turkey.
Go ahead.
Okay, thought I might have said another country. Yeah, Turkey. And the other country, Dr. Stan, is Austria. Has a hard time with them becoming part of the EU. I thought, isn't that interesting? Because it was in the 700s, just 100 years after the coming of Muhammad, you know, in the 6th century. It's in the 700s where they almost took all of Europe. The United States would have never existed if Muhammad took Europe. He almost took Europe, but they stopped him at France. The French stopped him, of all people. And then, guess what? Hundreds of years later, in the 1500s, they almost took Europe again, yet they were stopped at the gates of Ebony by They were stopped by the Austrians. So the two countries that stopped them from taking Europe are the two countries that are saying, hey, we don't want them as part of the EU, because they'd become instantly the largest nation, populace-wise, in the European Union. And why all this is very important, I believe, personally, is because a lot of people, they look at Muslims and what the Islamic religion teaches, and they say, hey, you know, there's these radical Muslims, they make about 10% of Islam. By the way, 10% of 1.6 billion is an awful lot of people. And they say it's these radical Muslims that want to actually take over the world. There's the other 90% of Muslims that you know, don't see Islam that way. But we need to understand, and many people view Turkey as a moderate Muslim state, mostly Muslim, but very moderate for the most part, politically speaking. But I'm very concerned about a moderate Muslim state as well. And that is because in the Quran, the reason there's so many different factions believing different things as far as whether we're supposed to militantly take over the world from the Gentile, you know, the pagans and the Christians, the Jews, as they would say, by force or not, is because there are definitely different verses in the Quran, different surahs. And there are those Medina surahs, and then those Mecca surahs. And there is the Meccan verses, and that's when Muhammad, basically, I mean, you can actually look at three different levels. I don't want to get too complicated with it, but you can say there were the early Mecca verses, and that's when Muhammad was in Mecca. He had no power whatsoever. He was just gaining a following, and those verses were about having peace and to each his own, to each have his, you know, can have your own religion. You'll find those verses in the Quran. But then he went to Medina, and when he went to Medina, he got a following and built an army. Now that army wasn't big enough to do what he wanted to do yet. So you have the Medina verses, which are basically surahs about, you know, self-defense. We can fight in self-defense. But then you have what I call the Mecca revisited surahs. He goes back to Mecca. He makes a peace agreement for 10 years to worship in the Kaaba, one of the many gods there, Allah. And then he goes back after the first year, and then they slaughter those in Mecca. And then you get the Mecca verses, which are basically slay the infidels wherever you find them. And Taqiyya is the doctrine of concealment, that you can conceal what your hidden desire is by making friends with the pagans, as long as you don't have to. The surahs basically say, and many Muslim scholars, and I'm not talking modern Muslim scholars, I'm talking companions of Muhammad himself and second, third generation scholars, talk about how you can use Taqiyya when you feel like you're in danger, or as one surah says that you can when you're not dominating, when you're not more powerful than your enemy, you know, you befriend them. And the idea is after you befriend them, they become more powerful, and that's when the Mecca revisited surahs come into play, and that's when you can dominate them, make them pay the tax and what have you, and find wherever you find them, slay them. And what's important to me about this is we have the radical, you know, Osama bin Laden types, and we have these types who want to just slaughter everybody. But then you have others. We have to understand it's so important. We have other Muslims out there that are practicing Taqiyya. For instance, those, it says when you're surrounded by the enemy and you can't overpower them, that then, you know, you befriend them. Otherwise, when you're dominant, though, do not befriend the Christians and the Jews. But make war on all those, it says. Make war on all those who do not believe in Allah, including the people of the book at that point. In fact, eventually, when they're, according to the Shiite Muslims, which is, you know, the type that we find in Iran with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, those Muslims, the Shiite Muslims, believe in a coming, you know, Messiah who will, and basically one of Muhammad's sayings from one of the Hadiths, it's repeated over and over again, that when their Messiah comes, that the rocks will cry out and say, hey, there's a Jew behind me, come and kill him. So we have to understand that the Quran teaches that there will be a world religion and it will be Islam. And I mean, Muslims can't deny. In fact, I quote right now from chapter 9, surah 33, or verse 33 will say, he is the one who sent his messenger with the guidance and the religion of truth and will make it dominate all religions in spite of the idol worshippers. And by the way, Dr. Stan, because...
Oh, hold that thought, Joe. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor Joe Schimmel, who's talking about the very real danger of the Mohammedan faith, which, of course, President Obama is doing everything he can to appease. Go right ahead, Joe.
Well, as mentioned in the Quran, chapter 9, surah 33.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Coming world government, the coming world economy, this whole uniting the world. Of course, you listen to what does the Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, talked about it after the recent conference there in London, why we're moving towards a new world order. Read what Henry Kissinger says about we're moving towards a new world order. This is what it's really all about. And until people understand there's a spiritual force behind everything going on today, and there is a powerful spiritual force behind Barack Obama that has been has been working to bring him into the presidency of the United States at this specific time in history. That's what's so incredible. They precipitated the financial collapse just immediately before the election to ensure the election of Barack Obama. So what is that force? Where is Barack Obama going to lead America? And will you pick up the story there, Joe?
Well, I have to agree 100% with you. I remember we were talking before the election, and we were amazed with what happened with regard to Wall Street just earlier, and, you know, the financial crunch here, and also with the OPEC nations, Muslim nations, mostly making up OPEC, creating a situation where they were, where gas prices were nearing $5 a gallon, and all that, of course, subsided right after Barack Obama, or just as he was being elected. And if people, you know, you can believe in a lot of coincidences, but it's quite amazing because, you know, some things you could chalk up and say, you know what, this we can't be absolutely sure was engineered, but there are many things we could look at that were definitely engineered. That Barack Obama himself, I mean, he went into Chicago, he joined Reverend Wright's church because he wanted to be able to win the support of the black Christian community in Chicago. He was working under, organizing teachings of, he was considered basically a community organizer, but it's interesting, as he was working under Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky was dead since the 70s, but Saul Alinsky's organizers, and he learned his tactics. One of his favorite books, it's been reported, was his book, Rules for Radicals. In fact, his wife, during his Democratic convention, accepting the nomination, she quotes from the book and refers to his days in Chicago when she was so proud of him. And what's interesting is that book is dedicated, and it's the tactics on how to get the power, is dedicated to Lucifer on the opening dedication page by Saul Alinsky. And I think it's so important what you've emphasized, Dr. Stan, is if people just see the outside, they just see the surface, what's going on, and they don't realize that there is a spiritual war, and that the Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, the Apostle Paul said, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. There are spiritual forces at work. God has allowed, man wasn't the first rebel. There's other rebels than just human beings. The Bible tells us that Satan was an angelic being who rebelled against God. He did not remain in the truth, it says, Jesus said. He was a murderer from the beginning. He's the father of lies, John 8:44, Jesus said. He manifested that rebellion among a third of the angelic realm. According to Revelation 12:9, he drew a third of the stars with him, and he deceives the whole world. And God allowed that to happen. God could have just wiped them out, but God allowed that to happen because God is allowing people to show their hearts. Who's going to follow God, who's going to be loyal to his truth and righteousness, and who is going to follow Satan? Who's going to line up on that side? And then there will be a great judgment. The Bible says it's appointed a man wants to die, but after this, the judgment. Well, what's interesting, when you look at Barack Obama, he has the skin of a veneer of Christianity, uses Christian lingo. He went to Reverend Wright's church because he said, he admits it in one of his books. I cite heavily in both of our videos from his books, and he states that he moved into Wright's church because he was counseled that if he wanted to get the Christian community behind him, he should join a church to do his community organizing. He did that, and he said he went to Reverend Wright's church because he saw spiritually eye to eye mostly with his version of Christianity, which of course was a social gospel, a more Sandinista, communistic, socialistic worldview of Christianity, which is not Christianity at all, and also a very pro-Muslim version of Christianity, which isn't Christianity at all again. And Reverend Wright, by the way, Dr. Stan, used to belong to the Nation of Islam under Louis Farrakhan. In fact, even as the pastor of his church, he and Obama went to the Million Man March by Louis Farrakhan.
Well, I think that people have to understand that Reverend Wright had an intense hatred of America. And why would Barack Obama have gone to Reverend Wright's church for part of 20 years, you know, been married there, had his children baptized there, if he didn't agree with Reverend Wright's hatred of America? So how did this man become president? There were powerful forces behind him. And one of the things that people have to understand, Wall Street and the Wall Street bankers were solid behind Barack Obama. Why would they back somebody who wanted to destroy America? You can only understand it by understanding the spiritual forces that energize the people. who lead our Wall Street banks.
I say yes, why you wanna make me always guess? Every now and then you seem to love me, then you don't. We'd be the perfect Romeo.
We'll go right ahead there.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because both Barack Obama and Reverend Wright went to Louis Farrakhan's Million Man March, and people need to understand that Louis Farrakhan is the leader of the Nation of Islam here in America. While they are not traditional Islam, while if you compare their teachings with the Quran, they're very, you know, much schismatic in regard to what the Quran teaches. But it's interesting because they still unite with traditional Islam. And many of the radicals, Louis Farrakhan, you know, a buddy of Muammar Gaddafi's, who, you know, Ronald Reagan called the mad dog of the Middle East. Farrakhan said Hitler was a great man. Farrakhan said the ovens for the Jews are something that they'll go back into gladly. I mean, he said that in a celebrative way, that they're forever for the Jews. He said Judaism is a gutter religion and what have you. But it's interesting that Reverend Wright went with Louis Farrakhan while he was pastoring his supposed Christian church to visit Muammar Gaddafi, to have a meeting. Muammar Gaddafi wanted to fund the Black Nationalist Movement, Nation of Islam, not fund them, I mean give them weapons to overtake the government. We have a video clip of Muammar saying that. But what's interesting is Muammar Gaddafi, before Barack Obama became president, not long before he became president, we have this as well on video, we have him speaking. He says that Barack Obama is engaged in an election day lie, and he said don't worry about what he said in regard to Jerusalem not being divided, you know, between the Palestinian state. He says that's an election day lie. After he gets elected, he will laugh at those who voted for him, because that's what this is about. Well, now we have Barack Obama stating in Turkey, to a mainly Muslim country, that there will be a two-state solution and there will be a Palestinian state created within what we would regard the borders of Israel. Now, it's interesting because Muammar knew that, and he said it's an election day lie. It's interesting because his pastor, Reverend Wright, who he sat under for 20 years and was basically forced away from him if he was going to have any hope of an election, Reverend Wright said after Barack Obama distanced himself from that, he said he understood. He said that he's allowed to lie because he's a politician. But Reverend Wright said he knows where his heart, you know, really is. And it was Reverend Wright who gave Louis Farrakhan the Lifetime Achievement Award at his church, or I say his church gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award. There was an article called How to Rebuild Hamas. You know, Hamas is a terrorist group that their charter calls for the utter destruction and annihilation of Israel. And, you know, they put, you know, bombs filled with ball bearings around little kids, suicide bombers, and blow whole buses up.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, Joe. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor Joe Schimmel, and talking about the relationship between Barack Obama and his minister, certainly Reverend Wright, who had an intense hatred of America, who is closely aligned with Louis Farrakhan. In fact, both Reverend Wright and Barack Obama joined the Million Man March, Louis Farrakhan's Million Man March, and Farrakhan certainly supported Islamic terrorism. Why would a man who professes to be a Christian be supporting Farrakhan? And, of course, Barack Obama wanted to become the president of the United States. He lied about many things to become the president. Now he has the power. But remember, the reason he's in power is because of the very wealthy people who backed him. Where do you think the $600 to $700 million that Barack Obama raised during the election came from? Do you think it was from the little mom-and-pop people? Yes, a lot of little people contributed to him because they were filled with hostility towards John McCain, because he was simply a clone of George Bush. Talk all you want to as a maverick. He was with George Bush on 90% of the major issues, and those he wasn't with Bush on, he was usually on the wrong side. But certainly as far as, Barack Obama was concerned, there were powerful, powerful forces that provided the money to put him in the presidency. But more than that, it was their control. And I'm talking about the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberger, control of the media. It wasn't that the media had a love affair with Barack Obama. It was that the financial establishment had a love affair with Barack Obama. What most people don't understand is they are energized by the same spiritual force that energizes Louis Farrakhan. Go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly right, Dr. Stan, because Reverend Wright's church, I mean, it was not vetted, it was not exposed for what it really was. It got very few minutes in the major national media. They dealt with it, but they didn't show a lot of what Reverend Wright was saying. They dealt with it minimally. More cleanup than anything. But it's interesting because an article called How to Rebuild Hamas, which was, how to strengthen it, how to rebuild it, was republished under another name in Reverend Wright and Barack Obama when he was there, when it was his church. It was republished in the church bulletin. Now, this is a guy who was wanted by the State Department, left the country, that wrote this article. Even on the Reverend Wright's website, church website, it talked about, and he's called Israel a terrorist state and what have you, but it talked about how Israel had developed a smart bomb that is so smart it kills just blacks and Arabs. Now, such ridiculous things remind you of the Protocols of Zion and what have you to permit hatred toward Israel and what have you, but Reverend Wright and Farrakhan, when they visited Qaddafi, we don't know all that was said there, but it's just quite amazing that when you look at Qaddafi and you see Qaddafi's video of him talking about with such adulation and such a celebratory tone before the election that don't worry, he's going to be elected and he will deal with Israel, letting them know. I mean, basically telling people he's practicing taqiyya, he's practicing concealment as to what his true motives are. Now, I'm not one that says, I don't go out and say that, Barack Obama is a, dyed-in-the-wool Muslim. I believe he's an internationalist. I believe he will use religions and use whatever it is to bring forth this new world order. In fact, he could be far darker in his spirituality than just straight Islam. I mean, there's many Muslims who they don't know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, the Son of God, who died for their sins. Muslims don't, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be Muslims. But many of them, most Muslims, they've been brought up with the Quran. They don't realize it came hundreds and hundreds of years sometimes after the Christian gospel and contradicts it, and that the Bible actually predicts, even if an angel from heaven preaches another gospel to you, that which we preach, let him be accursed. And an angel claimed to be from heaven, Gabriel, supposedly gave Muhammad the Quran, which contradicts the very gospel that was written years before, prophesied, is vouchsafed within Isaiah 53 in the Dead Sea Scrolls, which show us it didn't change. Because the Dead Sea Scrolls tell us in Isaiah chapter 7 and Isaiah chapter 9 that God would send his son, that he'd be called Emmanuel, God with us, in Isaiah 53, that he would die for the sins of the world. This was buried, the prophecies about Christ, prior to even the coming of Christ, and they've been discovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls, showing that the Christian gospel was the true gospel. By the way, I must say this, Dr. Stan, even in the Quran, Muhammad says, hey, ask the people of the book. He's talking about the Christians and the Jews. He says, and ask them if these things are not so. So he's basically appealing to the Christian Bible as in existence in his time as an authority. The problem is he hoped his listeners would not actually compare Islam with the Bible, which shows it says that Jesus isn't the Son of God, and he didn't die for us. And the Bible says in 1 John that those that deny the Father and the Son, 1 John chapter 2, that this is Antichrist. And the Bible tells us the central message of Jesus Christ is that he paid for our sins on the cross and that we can't get into heaven unless we're forgiven by God through Christ's death. Islam teaches that you make your own way, you pay your own way with your own works. The Bible says that our works before God are filthy rags. We could never do enough to earn our salvation because God owes us death. So we're talking about a cosmic battle between darkness and between light. The true gospel against the false gospel. Satan's religion is a religion of works. The New Age religion is a religion of spiritual evolution where you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps to get into the kingdom of God, and it's basically a spiritual battle at its core, as you mentioned at the beginning of the program, Dr. Stan. And what is heartbreaking is few people recognize that this is spiritual, and that they don't look into what's going on. What were the connections between Wright and Farrakhan and Gaddafi and Barack Obama? And how is it that geopolitically the world is moving so fast now toward a world religion with the New Age movement and with, you know, with Islam and with the international makers and shakers around the world and banking and the economy and what have you? It's all coming together. In fact, it's interesting. Sean Hannity was had an interview with Morris, the man who was advised of the Clintons and what have you, and they were saying, they said, this was when they were talking about going to global currency a couple weeks ago, and it was getting more out in the open, and the two of them looked at each other, and they said, wow, everybody, we, you know, everybody that talked about, you know, coming global currency and a new world order and that this was coming about, you know, we always think of those guys as kooks, but it's happening. And I thought, yeah, we've been trying to tell you guys for a long time. It's not that we're so bright, but we have the Word of God, which tells us that these things would happen, these things would take place. Thank God, Dr. Stan, amidst everything that is going on, you read the end of the book Revelation, God wins at the end, Satan is thrown in the lake of fire, the Antichrist, the false prophet thrown in the lake of fire, all those who reject the Lord God, refuse to bow the knee to Jesus Christ, are judged because they've rejected the salvation that could be theirs through Christ's death, and they're dealt with as well. And they're separated from God from eternity, and God reigns and righteousness reigns. But in the meantime, there's many souls being lost to this deception that are succumbing to the lies that are actually lining up to become Barack Obama's foot soldiers for the New World Order.
Well, I believe there are really millions of them here in this country, but throughout the world, and so many of them really, of course, understand the spiritual force behind Barack Obama. There is this powerful spiritual force. That was the very substance of the article I sent you by Corrine McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson, who were associated in the past with the Lucis Trust that used to, came out of, course, something known as the Lucifer Publishing House. And, of course, people do not understand there is this powerful occult world movement. And as Corrine McLaughlin quotes Barack Obama as saying, we are the ones we have been waiting for. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm going to, in a minute, pick up from where you just left off there after I give a little parenthetical thing that brings us back to what I just mentioned, because there's a big section in our video, even though you and I have shared quite a bit on this topic a few months back, and now as things are developing, what we're talking about is spot on. I have a whole section in our video that deals with the New Age movement. And you remember what you just said when Barack Obama says, we're the ones we've waited for. I want to talk in a little bit about what Oprah Winfrey said about him, what Louis Farrakhan said about him. And they're basically looking at him as the New Age Messiah, or the one that will herald the New Age Messiah. But Barack Obama, by the way, he went into the Blue Mosque and spent about 40 minutes in there in Turkey, took off his shoes and as though it was holy ground. And he also was taken by the leader of Turkey to a picture, or not a picture, something done in memory of Muhammad's grandson, whose name was also Hussein. And Barack Obama smiled as he pointed out to him that, you know, his name was Hussein like yours is. And Obama is using his new name Hussein in Europe and with the Islamic world over here. He tried to not use it. And, of course, even John McCain said, and, you know, he's scolding anybody that would dare use it, Barack Obama's middle name. Well, Barack Obama said that we're moving forward towards Turkish membership in the EU would be an important signal. I'm sorry, not say we are. He said moving forward towards Turkish membership in the EU would be an important signal of your commitment to this agenda and ensure that we continue to anchor Turkey firmly in Europe. And he wants to see Europe more, you know, become more and more one with, you know, Turkey and Europe become more one, because we're looking at this more light, you know, moderate type of Islam, which will definitely have an incredible impact. But you know what Muammar Gaddafi said, Dr. Stan? He said years ago, and keep in mind his meeting with Farrakhan and Wright, and keep in mind what he said about Barack Obama. He predicted that he'd become president, and then he would turn back on his words about not dividing Jerusalem, which he's already talking about. Muammar Gaddafi said that Europe would be taken without firing a shot. And that's exactly what's happening. Europe has been taken by, already manipulated for years by, the rich and the powerful and the warmongering. But he said they'd be taken without a shot, meaning for Islam. And now through mass immigration, and I think the UN put the birth rate to sustain Europe to be about 2.2. Europeans are producing about 2.1. Well, Muslims are producing over there incredibly, and many of their cities are quickly becoming Muslim dominated. And you know what happened over there with regard to, there's five courts over there right now, Dr. Stan, in England, that are Sharia law courts. The Scandinavian countries and so forth, they won't say much about Islam because of the threats that came because of one cartoon. And then we could look at France. You see Sarkozy's wife when dressing in Muslim headdress in various areas of France because of fear. And now they've targeted the United States of America, and they want our country. In fact, Omar M. Ahmad, the chairman of CARE, Mainstream Muslim Advocacy Group, that was basically found out to have some nefarious plans recently when they had hid behind being tolerant, which I think is very, very revealing when we talk about taqiyya and concealment. But he said, Omar Ahmad said, Islam isn't in America to be equal to any other faith, but to become dominant. The Quran, he said, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth. Everything we need to know is in the Quran. We don't need to look somewhere else. So people need to understand, even those who pass themselves off as, as mellow, moderate Muslim advocacy groups, often, I'm not saying always, but often, have very nefarious designs for the United States of America.
And I'm sure you're absolutely right. They pretend, of course, to be oh so interested in the political process and democracy, but there is no democracy in the Muslim faith. The Muslim faith, the Sharia law is the law of the land. The Muslim religion is the religion of the land. And the leaders will go right along with what the Quran says. This is the thing that the average American doesn't understand. And we are being intentionally taken over. Many of our cities, they have their mosques in. They have their call to worship five times a day. And you'll be wakened up in the middle of the night. What is it, call to worship? At what, 4 o'clock in the morning, something like that. People say it could never happen here, and I would say, why couldn't it happen here? If God is just, he is going to destroy this nation, and what better way to do it than allowing a free Muslim immigration? And of course, if they're even talk about here in the United States, we know that in Great Britain today, they already have courts that are Sharia law. And I don't think it'll be long before we have courts of the Sharia law here in the United States, and Muslims will be judged under Sharia law, and you and I will be judged under the laws of this land, or what used to be the laws of this land, which are now the laws of the ruling elite. But go right ahead, Joe.
That's a chilling concern, Dr. Stan. And Obama had spent, I think it was $20 million, his administration, on bringing those in the Gaza Strip over to the United States in an immigration plan, and $900 million toward Gaza to rebuild Gaza and the Palestinian Authority. Much of it went to the Palestinian Authority as well. And these are both states. I mean, you remember under Arafat, he was seeking, although he was saying things in public that were, happy and, hey, we want to coexist and what have you. There are many declarations. They're on record where privately and just strictly Islamic gatherings, he said that Israel would be pushed into the sea. And now we poured nearly $1 billion into rebuilding Gaza, and much of that will be used by Hamas, who seeks, according to their charter, the utter destruction of Israel.
Well, I think what people have to understand is we're financing the Islamic terrorist movement throughout the world. Where did Hamas come from? We carry a book called the devil's game, and it's written some years ago, according to the fact that the American CIA and the Mossad, which work closely together, created Hamas. We are always creating and financing enemies, just as today we are funding the Pakistan military that's funding the ISI, that's funding the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, who are killing our boys in Afghanistan. What's wrong with this picture? Because nothing as it appears to be. Unless you understand their powerful spiritual forces behind everything, why, none of it makes sense. And once you understand these powerful spiritual forces that hate humanity and want to kill as many Americans and cripple as many American soldiers as possible, then things really begin to make sense. But go right ahead, Pastor.
Well, as you're saying, Dr. Stan, when there's enough chaos created, everybody wants the government. Basically, the end game is the government to take care of us, and ultimately, everybody line up and become Obama bots and basically, you know, submit to blindly to leadership, even if it's evil. And I'm a strong believer in the Bible as the Word of God, and Romans 13 does say that God has given, he's you know, created governments to protect the people from evil. Governments are, you know, supposed to protect people from evil, people breaking your homes, people, you know, genocide, things like that. They're not supposed to be a big brother that dictates every part of your life, and that's what we're headed toward. We're headed toward, you know, a big brother system that every single person right now listening should be on their knees seeking God and saying, God, what do I do for such a time as this, and how do I speak up and speak the truth in love?
And, of course, we see the video cameras going up all over America. Oh, well, we have to put those cameras up to ferret out the wicked terrorists. And that's why we're collecting dossiers on American citizens and why we want everything shipped here and why we want every American to carry an ID card. Because we wouldn't want Osama bin Laden sneaking in, would we? Pastor, you've got 3 more minutes to this section of the program, so go right ahead, and then we'll take a little short break. And then...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
The first one on Obama, we'll probably carry that one. We'll probably carry both the first and the second one. We think they're important. But how can people get in touch with you and right now and get copies of that DVD that you put out?
Yeah, they can go to lastdefense.org, and that's part one has been done for some time, and that's Barack Obama basically on a lot of the social issues, areas that should be important, I believe, to every human being. Regarding the killing of innocent babies, the issue of abortion, we have a Holocaust here in the United States that dwarfs what happened in Germany. Over 50 million babies put to death, and Barack Obama promised to be very aggressive in shooting down laws that protect those babies. And also with sex education, we do a lot on sex education in that video, as well as Planned Parenthood. In fact, somebody just told me today that they said, you know what, you should take that whole section out of that video on Planned Parenthood and just put that out on Planned Parenthood, because that had such an impact, it's so impacting. So that video, just for the section as to what's going on socially, apart from even the Obama stuff, is important, but we show where he lies in that regard. And then
I'm going to interrupt you right there. Please get your website out one more time, and then we'll get it out again.
That'll be lastdefense.org.
Lastdefense.org. Okay, Joe, and just hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us. So if you're in a position to help, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Or there's a donation button on our website if you'd like to help. And certainly then, Chris, we hope that you want to get some of the material that we put together on the spiritual battle, my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, my talk on the on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. There's a syllabus that goes with that. And then, of course, the Secret Mystery series of DVDs, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and then the third and really, I think, probably the best of the series, The Eye of the Phoenix, goes into the occult symbols on the back of the dollar bill, because they love to hide their emblems in plain sight, and we certainly don't even see them. If you want to
understand real quick, only because I'm going to get in trouble with a lot of people, that's 7obamanations, .com or .org.
All right,
The number 7, then Obamanations, Obamanations.org or .com.
All right, fine. I don't want you to get in trouble with a lot of people. Anyway, Pastor Joe's one of our favorite guests here. We carry his DVDs. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version, you'll certainly want to get those. We carry several other DVDs that he's put out. All you have to do is call our number at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a list of the other DVDs we carry, what are the names of some of the other DVDs, Joe?
Man, we have one we just finished called The Kinsey Syndrome.
Right, did we carry that?
Yeah, that one's awesome, and that one was Ted Baer, top Christian movie critic, said he feels it's one of the most important movies of the 21st century. That explodes basically the sexual revolution here in this nation. Is 2 hours and 40 minutes, and it's jaw-dropping.
All right, what are some of the other DVDs that we carry?
There's Hollywood's War on God.
We have that one.
Gnosticism within, Hollywood. There is Harry Potter. I think expose we've done Harry Potter. Man, there's a number of them. But I'm speaking now in reference to, now I'm crossing over, just answering your question, regarding more of our ministry, but I have to speak to you in terms legally, in terms of from our PAC with regard to the seven abominations.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment.
Website.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty with Pastor Joe Schimmel. But please pray for America. Pray for revival. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And, well, if you're leaving us now, we'll see you tomorrow. Otherwise, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Deanna Spingola, and Deanna, of course, writes regularly for newswithviews.com. But she's written a couple of articles on the background of financing and what's going on in the world today, and so we're going to have her on tonight and tomorrow night to try to cover these two articles, and if we need to have her on for additional time, we will, because it's so vitally important that people understand the banking cabal. It is a cabal. These people work in secret. They've done everything to make the things confusing. They don't want you to understand what they're doing, but they're like a hidden brotherhood, and they run the banks of the world and the central banks of the world and, of course, the major banks here in the United States, which are some of the most powerful banks in the world. And certainly it is not that our government regulates them. They control our governments and take control who becomes the president and who becomes the vice president. And, of course, they work through the Trilateral Commission. David Rockefeller probably has trillions. The family has probably countless trillions of dollars. But the average American thinks Bill Gates and of course, Warren Buffett are the richest people in the world, and they're pikers compared with the people who really control the wealth of the world. So without further ado, let's get to Deanna. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Well, I know it's late back there in Chicago, but you go ahead and pick up the story.
All righty. On February 17th, 1950, James Paul Warburg appeared before the U.S. Senate, and he declared, and I quote, "We shall have world government whether or not we like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent."
And actually, that is a direct quotation before Congress, but the average individual doesn't understand that's what it's really all about, isn't it, Deanna?
Exactly, exactly. And in order to establish world government, it's necessary to incrementally eradicate the Constitution, bring the U.S. to her knees economically, shackle the taxpayers to perpetual debt through bailouts and stimulus packages, funded by printing billions of dollars of interest and debt-bearing Federal Reserve notes.
And of course, it was Paul Warburg who was there at the original secret meeting held at Jekyll Island back in 1910, where they planned America's Central Bank. They call it the Federal Reserve, but it's about as Federal Express is. And here's where a small group of people plotted to take over control of the banking and ultimately of our own government. If you look at the Trilateral Commission today, you'll find people from one of the Warburg Company of divisions there, member of the Trilateral Commission, this little group of 87 people, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup. They're all there, you know, the major banks and the Warburgs as well, planning on the destruction of our freedom. Go right ahead, Deanna.
Right. And Warburg was actually from M.M. Warburg. So he was still a partner there. He became a partner over here with Kuhn Loeb and was able to orchestrate a lot of loans and whatnot. But as you said, they planned the Federal Reserve. And this was actually the culmination of years and decades of planning to get a central bank Now, originally, we had a central bank, and that was back in, it was because of the Revolutionary War. Now, during the 1700s, the colonists created a debt-free scrip, and this was, it met the demands of trade and industry. The people were self-sufficient and industrious. But England did not like us having currency.
Hold that thought. I'll be back in just a moment. Deanna, go right ahead.
Okay, so England was totally against us having our own currency. And they wanted to, and so they strapped us, they burdened us with excess taxes to fund Britain's imperialistic wars. And this is actually what led to the Revolutionary War. And Alexander Hamilton, who was actually a Rothschild agent, convinced George Washington to allow the Rothschilds to fund the war. And so after the war, there was quite a large debt to be paid. Hamilton set up a central bank, which was owned by the Rothschilds, and it was called the First Bank of the United States. It had a 20-year charter. And towards the end of the charter, Congress decided not to renew it, and so that bank was closed on March 4th, 1811. Now, Nathan Rothschild was absolutely outraged, and he asked the British Parliament to declare war to reinstate the bank. Well, the Prime Minister refused and was summarily assassinated on May 11th,
1812. Gee, what a coincidence.
What a coincidence! And Parliament then declared war on June 18, 1812. And British troops, actually it was Canadian troops, but they were under the jurisdiction of the Brits, burned the White House and other government buildings. And that was why we had the War of 1812. It had everything to do with the central bank and nothing to do with what the history books tell us that it was about. Anyway, our national debt increased from $45 million to $127 million. President Madison proposed the establishment of a second central bank on December the 5th, 1815, again for a 20-year period of time. It was created by Congress, and Nicholas Biddle, a Rothschild protege, became the bank's president in 1822. Now, President Andrew Jackson refused to renew that charter in 1836, and that was one of his promises when he was running for president. And he did rout out the devils, and he actually was the only president to ever pay off the national debt. And so then we come along, and Lincoln, in opposition to the international bankers, issued a debt-free, interest-free currency.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Deanna is giving us a fascinating overview of history and simply pointing out that the colonies had a central bank, and they were able to produce a debt-free paper currency and expand it just as was needed for the colonies, and the colonies were doing very well. But the bankers over in Europe disapproved of that, and that, of course, they tried to stop America from issuing its own currency, because that would mean it would be a free nation and not under control of the banking cabal in England. And when they were the colonists objected to it, that was the reason for the war. It wasn't a taxation without representation. It was the fact that the Americans wanted to produce their own money. Then, of course, the first central bank of the United States, the First Bank of the United States, created in 1791 under the auspices of Alexander Hamilton, but controlled from Europe. The European bankers controlled a third of the money in that, and when 1811 came around, the 20-year charter was up. The Congress didn't renew it, and so, of course, the European bankers were furious. They demanded that the British government declare war on the United States. When the Prime Minister of Great Britain didn't do that, he was immediately assassinated, and immediately then the War of 1812 occurred. And then, of course, the Second Bank of the United States created in 1816, and then Andrew Jackson fortunately was able to do away with that. The people stood behind Jackson because he pointed out the bank was controlled by foreign interests. And then, of course, they plunged our nation into a terrible depression there in the 1830s. But the American people at that time understood banking. They understood that the bankers create prosperity for themselves and for the people, and then they contract the economy and people lose their homes, just like they're doing now, and their factories, just like they're doing now, and their farms, just like they're doing now, and were plunged into poverty. So then you got, of course, to the Civil War, when Abraham Lincoln refused to go to the bankers to fund the war, and he actually issued a debt-free currency. Now, see, all of our currency today is debt, and we have to pay interest to the bankers for our own currency that they print. But Abraham Lincoln had the audacity to create the Lincoln Greenback. So what happened to him?
Well, he went to the theater one night, and we know what happened then. He was assassinated. And the Civil War, which was never about slavery. In fact, Lincoln said it wasn't his intentions to free the slaves. And he felt that was not the intention. And that bloody battle took the lives of over 600,000 souls. And basically, it was orchestrated opposition. It was set up to divide and conquer our country. The bankers were going to rule over us no matter what. And they felt that we were too strong. We were getting much stronger. We were industrious. We were rich. We had a lot of resources. And they couldn't handle that. And so they thought, okay, if we can divide them, then we will prevent their further growth.
And I think the story of the murder of Lincoln by a man named Booth, is John Wilkes Booth, is fascinating. We carry a book called The Elite Serial Killers. Wilkes was a Rothschild agent. He survived the fire in the barn. He actually went over to England, got his money, and apparently died many years later in India. And his granddaughter tracked down the story. And, of course, a lot of this is told by Galen Ross in his book, The Elite Serial Killers. But you're never going to hear this. Now, of course, people always say, oh, you think it's the Jewish bankers. No, these are satanic. There's a small little cabal of people. Some of them are Jewish, most are not. But they're Satanists. They're part of this move towards the world government. But the Rothschilds are certainly the leaders over there in England. Here it's the Rockefellers here, and they work closely, hand in hand. We have to understand that there is another element over there that is above government. It always has been. And when people get in the way, well, they end up like Abraham Lincoln did, and so many of our other presidents, like John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who tried to issue a debt-free currency. And that is something you do not do. Go right ahead.
Okay, so the bankers came over here, and they established themselves. J.P. Morgan and Company was founded in New York City in 1871. It was founded by J. Pierpont Morgan and a Philadelphia banker by the name of Anthony Drexel. And they were basically agents for Europeans investing in the United States. They became so well capitalized that they financed much of America's industrial expansion. And by the 1890s, Morgan became an industry consolidator. He reorganized and restructured the debts of financially troubled railroads, like the Northern Pacific, the Erie, the Reading, and many other railroads, and basically for a total of one-sixth of all the track in the U.S. And Morgan financed and merged smaller companies to create big, giant corporations, U.S. Steel, International Harvester, and others. And remember that a decline in competition results in a concentration of control. And when we see companies merging now and we see smaller companies becoming bigger, then we have to understand that that is what is happening. And also we have to take a look at the corporate business form. Now, corporations for a long, long time were illegal because a lot of people would con a bunch of small investors into investing money into a particular corporation, which wasn't anything at all. It was just a scam. And so corporations were really illegal in Britain. But corporations have taken over American business. And J.P. Morgan helped to do that by his consolidation efforts with all these smaller, financially insecure companies. And, you know, when he loaned money to them, when the banks loan money, then they also have an interest in the decisions that are made by those corporations. And that's the reason that you buy that ability to make business decisions for the corporations that you're putting money into. And J.P. Morgan loaned money also he financed the Panama Canal, which was the largest real estate transaction in history. And that there's quite a big story behind that also. He loaned money to Thomas Edison for his incandescent light research, and so therefore he directed Edison's power generation and distribution plants. And he also attempted to take over Tesla's patents and things. He wanted to loan money to Tesla. Now, Tesla was a Serbian. He was an absolute genius. He came to America. He became a U.S. citizen. He was very, very intelligent. He was fluent in 7 languages, and he actually patented the radio on March 20th, 1900. And this was a patent that was usurped and used by Marconi. Now, Tesla needed the financing that the House of Morgan could offer him, but he wished to retain his independence and creative genius, and so he resisted that accompanying control. He'd already seen what the robber barons had done with the Thomson-Houston Company and the Edison Company. The Edison Company was actually the culmination. Morgan took the Thomson-Houston Company and the Edison Company, merged them to form General Electric, which became worldwide. In fact, they were one of the first companies that went over and invested in Japan. They invested in Germany. They're just all over. And Tesla had witnessed how Morgan coveted and endangered the autonomy of Westinghouse, another company. And keep in mind, these are companies that people really look to provide essential commodities, electricity, energy. And so the bankers are always interested in controlling something that everybody needs. They have a monopoly on something that everybody wants and needs. And Morgan actually wanted Tesla to sign over his broad spectrum radio patents as security for the loans. Now, Tesla also had plans for a directed energy weapon that he had not yet patented. And even though Tesla was opposed to war, he still created this weapon, but not to be used as a weapon. It was a directed energy apparatus. And Tesla's alternating current induction motor could have provided free worldwide electricity to every human being on the planet. And of course, Morgan, who made huge profits from energy, wished to conceal that possibility. And so Tesla really resisted Morgan. He did take some money from him, but he managed to retain control. Now, there was a German-born George H. Scherf, Sr., who served as Tesla's accountant and assistant. And when Tesla passed away, he was quite elderly when he passed away, in 1943, the government seized control of all his papers, and they classified them. And those papers, much of those papers, many of those papers, fell into the hands of the Department of Defense. And they are still, many of them are still classified. And they were held by the government because they said, oh, well, he was an alien, so we have to confiscate all of these papers. But remember that he had become a U.S. citizen. So that's a smokescreen when the government says, well, he was alien, and so we had to take these papers. But I'm certain that they've put many of those things to use, many of the ideas that he had, including the idea for HAARP, which is currently...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Deanna Espingola, and somebody named Tony had called from Santa Cruz. He wondered what the source of your documentation is. Now, I, of course, have read most of what you've already said, but I think you're putting it forward very well. What references would you give Tony where he could document what you're saying?
Which part?
Well, okay, let's start with the idea of the first bank, the second bank of the United States, and then of course, what happened as far as the Andrew Jackson and, of course, Abraham Lincoln. Do you have a pretty good source for that?
The creature from Jekyll Island is a really good source, and there's also some nice videos about this. The Money Masters is a very good source. It's quite a lengthy video. It's available online at Google. It's one of the Google videos. It's also on YouTube in several parts.
All right, fine. That's the Creature of Jekyll Island, which we carry, the Money Masters. It is available on the Internet. Anything else you'd like to suggest that you read?
There's a very good book about Tesla. It is called Tesla. I'm looking for the...
Well, I think Tony was primarily interested in the financial statements, and I would simply suggest to Tony that he get our little pamphlet. It's called The History of Money, What You Should Know. I think it's very inexpensive, and it's a compilation of five of our newsletters. If you can't afford it, you can go up on the Internet and pull those down, but it's just very inexpensive, The History of Money, which gives just about everything Deanna has said and the source of documentation for it. But she did such a good job of pulling this together in her newsletters. I just wanted to have them come out. But if Tony, I would suggest the Ed Griffin's The Creature from Jekyll Island, my pamphlet, The History of Money, which goes back to many of the original documents that we actually have, Andrew Jackson's speeches and letters, statements he made publicly about this central bank, the second central bank of the United States, headed by Nicholas Bedell, that he was going to destroy. And he said, you have two choices. It's either the central bank and no Jackson, or Jackson and no central bank. Because he felt it was being used by an elite group, the people of great wealth, to exploit the masses. And he was absolutely right. Same thing is going on today. And could we be talking about 150, 170 years later? Exactly the same thing. So go ahead, Deanna.
Right. You know, I think that Tony and so many other Americans have not heard of these things before because they don't teach it in the schools. That to hear it all at one time is a little bit overwhelming. But by the turn of the century, Americans paid very few taxes, they had minimal debt, and they grew their business internally. They didn't depend on the banks to grow their businesses. However, by 1910, there were throughout the country a combination of over 20,000 private banks. And there were also some national banks chartered by the federal government. Now, these banks were all competition for the big New York City banks. And so they didn't like that. You know, the power elite do not like competition. And legally, those banks, those 20,000 banks, were allowed to issue currency or banknotes. And they still operated on a fractional reserve system.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Deanna Stephanie was talking about towards the end of the 19th century, why there was a lot of prosperity in America. America was growing. Yes, we had J.P. Morgan. We had them consolidating control of the big railways and a lot of the big industry, but there was a lot of small industry, and you could go ahead and open up a business, and we had, you know, tens of thousands of small banks, but they were responsible. They had a fractional reserve system, but if they ran out of money, they had to run on the bank, why, because they would end up going to prison, of course, and all of their assets would be lost. So bankers were responsible, except you had this small group of very wealthy people, J. Pierpont Morgan, and certainly by the 1910-1915 era, why, you begin to have the Rockefellers coming in, and then you had the Whitneys coming in, and the Mellons, and these powerful banking families dominating banks, massive banks in the United States. But, of course, it was one thing, of course, to be able to control the money. It was another thing, if you really wanted to control, you had to control the government. And that is what it was all about. And then you can control your competition. Of course, the one thing these people hated was the competition of small independent banks who were doing a good job and acting responsibly. So when you could create money out of nothing, which banks do, when you can actually have a fractional reserve system, which means you only have to have a fraction of what you load out on reserve, and all the rest you create out of nothing, why, of course, you can create tremendous prosperity and credit. And a lot of people can do very well. They can borrow money and make more money and then borrow more money and make more money. But when the bankers decide that things are going to change and they restrict access to credit, and you can't get credit anywhere because they blacklisted you, why, you will be destroyed. And this is what Woodrow Wilson wrote about in his book, The New Freedom, and we'll be quoting that in our subsequent newsletters. As he said, you know, they can destroy anyone they want to, and they regularly do it. And we're talking about 1913 when The New Freedom was published. You go ahead, Deanna.
Okay. In the fall of 1910, six influential competitor bankers and one well-connected congressman, Republican Senator Nelson Aldrich, went to Jekyll Island. And they went there very secretively. They all took a train that was very private. They used they only used their first names. And they acted like they were going duck hunting and borrowed the proper plots to look like that's what they were going to do. But they actually went there to plot the establishment of a shared monopoly. Now, these were competitor bankers, but they recognized that in order to create a monopoly, that they had to band together in order to do that. And the monopoly they created was the Federal Reserve System, which is not federal and doesn't have any reserves and is not a system. And the bankers represented the interest of J.P. Morgan, Rothschild, Rockefeller, Warburg, and Kuhn Loeb Company. Consequently, after this meeting and in 1913, legislation was passed to create the Federal Reserve System. And it was done right around the Christmas holiday when a lot of the senators, a lot of the congresspeople were home on holiday. And the Federal Reserve Act was passed, and it was put under the jurisdiction of the Board of Directors. Supposedly and legally, the Board of Directors is chosen by the President and okayed by the Congress. The United States was divided into 12 Federal Reserve Districts. And Americans were led to believe that the Fed would eliminate all financial catastrophes and it would stabilize the economy, when in reality, the Fed is a cartel that was designed to obliterate competition and increase profits through higher prices and deceptive policies that were enforced and are enforced by the government.
And, of course, what's really so interesting is that the American people were told that this is how they were going to keep the rich bankers from exploiting the people. And everybody was in favor of it because they remembered how the rich bankers had created a depression in 1907. And they remembered in the late 1890s how the rich bankers had created recessions and contracted the money supply. So they really believed the Federal Reserve was a federal effort to control the rich bankers, whereas actually it was an effort on the part of the rich bankers to deceive the people and to gain control of our, not only of our economy, but ultimately of total control of our government. And what people do not understand is the Federal Reserve is a central bank. Literally every country in the world has a central bank, and the governments don't control the central banks. The central banks control the government. In fact, if you read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, on page 324, he tells how the central banks get together and hold secret meetings so they can control their respective countries and plan to rule the world in a feudalistic fashion. A feudalistic fashion. Well, Deanna, go right ahead with your story.
Well, actually, the federal, or the bankers, those big bankers, pretended to be against the Federal Reserve, when in fact, they were actually the ones behind the creation of it, but they had to pretend in order for the people to accept it.
And it's sort of like, oh, Peter Rabbit, you know, don't throw me in the briar patch, don't throw me in the briar patch. And it was the greatest scam of all time. Like so many of the things that are going on today, they say one thing when they mean exactly the opposite. But go
exactly,
right ahead.
Exactly, exactly. Anyway, J.P. Morgan arranged the financing and the purchasing, and this was after the Federal Reserve was established. He arranged all the financing for World War One. He was the purchasing agent for American supplies for France and Britain. And by the end of the war, J.P. Morgan Bank had handled $3 billion in commercial transactions and made a profit of $3 million.
Well, I think what's so important, you know, is to understand that the American banks, J.P. Morgan as the prototype, could finance both sides. They financed the Germans and the Austrians, and they financed the Allies and the Americans. They financed both sides. That way you make a lot more, you know, when you're financing both sides in a war, exactly as during the Napoleonic Wars, by the Rothschilds, the European branch financed Napoleon, and of course the English branch financed the English government, but go right ahead.
Right. They also arranged over $1.5 billion in credits to become the world's most influential bank, which moved it permanently into the political arena of foreign policy. And basically, it is the banks that establish foreign policy. They are really an extension of the federal government. They do control the federal government, along with the Bilderbergs, the Trilateral Commission, and the CFR. In 1901, the U.S. national debt was less than $1 billion. After World War One, the national debt was $25 billion. Between World War One and Two, it increased to $49 billion. In 1952, in the midst of the Korean War, which was under UN command, the debt stood at $72 billion. Now, Douglas MacArthur was the first U.S. general to serve under the UN. And that's very important. In 1962, it's disgraceful.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Deanna is simply talking about, of course, that the banks financed both sides of the First World War, and of course, they certainly were instrumental in the Second World War. She talks about, of course, this move towards world government, and of course, what everybody has really has missed, as they're talked about, this effort of the large mega banks, working in concert throughout the world. And they got us into the First World War. Many people think it was all for profit, but I think it was, of course, to bring in the League of Nations. Why? That was the slogan for the war. It was the war to end all wars, to bring in the League of Nations. The Second World War was fought to bring in the United Nations. And what people do not understand is that there is another X factor out there. And only when you begin to understand that John Pierpont Morgan, J.P. Morgan, was deeply involved in the occult can you begin to understand that the Rockefeller family has been involved in the occult, the Ford family was involved in the occult, the Carnegies were involved in the occult, Napoleon was involved in the occult, and suddenly we begin to see a pattern here, all of them working towards the same ultimate goal, a one-world government. A one-world financial system, a destruction of Christianity, and, of course, the imposition of a one-world leader, the ancient plan of the ancient mystery religions, but actually projected today into the economic field, and the average person focuses on the individual without the spiritual force that energizes them, and, of course, help J.P. Morgan obtain countless billions of dollars. It's all available up on the Internet. Just Google in J.P. Morgan and astrology, and you'll find out he had his own personal astrologer who recommended everything he did, but then so did Ronald Reagan, and of course so many of our presidents are involved in the occult, and people have forgotten Hillary Clinton actually invited a medium to come into the White House to conjure up spirits there. But then, of course, Franklin Roosevelt was involved in the occult. Certainly, Harry Truman was a 33rd degree Mason and involved in the occult. Richard Nixon was involved in the occult. Lyndon Johnson and Gerald Ford had both sworn their oaths as Masons to the great architect of the universe, who was Lucifer. And if you follow this thing back, you find time and time and time again, people in key positions are involved in this supernatural and this search for this plan for a one-world government. But go ahead, Deanna.
Okay. The national debt, that's very interesting, though. All of these people, and it all ties together. All ties together. When you know all that background, you think, oh, yes. It's like a light bulb goes on, and you think, oh, yes, of course. But these are things that are not readily known. In 1962, the debt was $303 billion, which increased to $383 billion by 1970 during the Vietnam War, which was such a costly war in terms of deaths, 58,000 American deaths, 3 million Vietnamese deaths. But by the end of the war, in 1976, the debt was at $631 billion. During the 1980s and the orchestrated Cold War military buildup, the debt increased substantially because, remember, we had this formidable enemy now that actually the bankers built up. They were building up the Soviet Union starting in 1916. And Anthony Sutton wrote three incredible books called Western Technology and the Soviet
Economic Development.
Economic Development.
Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, a trilogy available from the Hoover Institute. Still, at least last time I checked, it was.
Fabulous books, fabulous books. It gives the whole history. And so the bankers were behind that, too, so that we would have an enemy. You know, if you don't have one, you create one. And the people follow along and the government does fear mongering and say, oh, we've got to have all these weapons so that we can protect ourselves. Now, certainly we should protect ourselves. Constitutionally, we are supposed to defend our country. Not be offensive, but to defend. But the international bankers funded both the United States buildup and the Soviet buildup. And all of those records, all the records that Anthony Sutton wrote about, were all classified by an executive order in 1953, so that the American public would not be able to go back and say, oh, my gosh, look what has gone on. And so there's lots of classified records. And a government that acts in secret, that is totally wrong. We are supposed to have transparency. The people are, the people created the government. And we are supposed to rule the government. The government is not supposed to rule us. And what was it that Thomas Jefferson said? When the people are afraid of the, what did he say?
He said, when the government fears the people, there's freedom. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny.
Right. And that is so true. By 1998, our national debt was $5.5 trillion. We've gone through all these wars, and now we're up to $5.5 trillion. Now, the national debt is well over $10.8 trillion. We have spent $3 trillion just in Iraq. Now, this is just government debt. This does not include personal indebtedness, such as credit cards, car loans, or mortgages.
Well, I think it's important to realize that the year 2009 is going to increase the national debt about, at the present time, about $2 trillion. Remember, it took us 200 years from 1789 until 1980 to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. By the end of the Reagan administration, we had $2.7 trillion of debt. When George Bush came in, we had about $5.6 trillion. It's about $10.8 trillion today. But at the present time, the year 2009, in this one period, we're going to have at least $2 trillion in debt, and perhaps much more, because, of course, of all this money, they're pouring in to try to create the economic problems that they've intentionally created. And what they're going to do, and what I personally believe they intend to do, is destroy the value of our currency so they can enslave the American people. They're witnessing the greatest transfer of wealth we have ever seen. From the poor and middle class in a rich country to the extremely wealthy in a rich country. But go right ahead.
So how did we get into this situation? Well, by the 1920s, banks routinely offered low interest credit to businesses that had previously relied on profits and patience to expand their businesses. Soon, these businesses were naturally eager for the additional profit, and they accepted the deceptively low-interest loans offered by the banks. And once they were hooked, businesses became dependent on banks for growth. And to maintain the perceptions beneficial to their objectives, bankers have always, always entrenched like-minded minions into influential positions. They have purchased newspaper publishers, editors, columnists, university presidents, professors, textbook writers, labor union leaders, filmmakers, and radio and television commentators. And in this way, they can create our perceptions so that we buy into what they are trying to sell us. We buy into their ideas, we go along with their wars, and we're completely captivated by them.
And I think that's there was I think it's so interesting, Deanna, because I can see, I keep getting these books all the time about how terrible the Muslims are, how vicious they are, how badly they treat women, how they chop off people's hands and feet, how militant they are, how they want to kill us all. Mm-hmm. And they're conditioning the minds of the American people by a very carefully planned, conceived propaganda campaign for us to hate the Muslims.
Right.
And they're working over there in the Muslim world to try to get the Muslims and the Arab people to hate the Americans. Obviously, they're planning on another war. The average American can't see that at all. But, of course, we've got to let them understand that, you know, certainly we've got along with the Muslim world for a long period of time. We've had some problems from time to time. But believe me, the attack on the World Trade Center was not what we've been told, because Building 7 came down, part of a controlled demolition. And if Building 7 was controlled demolition, anybody can go up to the website, AE 9/11 Truth, that's Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and look at Building 7 come down, watch it come down. It's very obvious that the center of the building comes down, first. That's what you do in a controlled demolition. Watch it a few times, and you'll realize they lied to us. They lied to us about Building 7. They lied to us about everything to get us into the war in Afghanistan, to get us into a war with Iraq. And I fear everything going on today suggests we're soon going to be in a war with Pakistan and the Muslim world, and it may well be a nuclear war. But the propaganda you talk about is being used so readily today to prepare us for war with the Muslim world. But you go on, Deanna.
Right. There was a panic. It was called the New York Panic of 1920 to 21. And after that panic, and people were coming back from recovering from the panic, we were still industrially strong. Farms provided adequate food, toxin-free, ungenetically modified food. Our infrastructure at that point in time and the transportation systems were then modern, efficient. We were technologically advanced compared to the rest of the world.
And this was artificially created, a banking panic of 20 and 21, isn't that
sure.
correct? The banks created a panic, contracted the money supply. You couldn't get credit. You couldn't, if you owed a lot of money, and you couldn't borrow money anyplace, what would happen? And there was no money to borrow. And so they simply, once again, took away people's homes and jobs and factories and farms. And then, of course, but we recovered from that. And then, of course, they started all over again into the roaring 20s to produce artificial prosperity because they controlled the Federal Reserve System, the privately owned central bank of the United States. But go right ahead.
And they controlled all the banks, all the so-called independent banks throughout the country, because all of those banks were, of course, part of the system now. And they did create this artificial panic in order for people to look to investing in the stock market, because it seemed to be easy money. And in 1921, the per capita income was $522. In 1925, Winston Churchill, Chancellor of the Exchequer, wanting England to return to world leadership, adjusted the British pound to $4.86, which limited the amount of British goods companies and individuals around the world could afford. Consequently, over the next 2 years, hundreds of millions of dollars of gold flowed into the U.S. from all over Europe. And that is because we were very highly productive. We had a lot of product to offer to the world. Britain did not. But they wanted America to have all this gold funneled into America, and for a particular reason. Montague Norman of the Bank of England, Charles Rist of the Bank of France, Halimar Schacht of the Reichsbank, Benjamin Strong of the Federal Reserve, all privately owned central banks, and Andrew Mellon, Secretary of the Treasury, convened in 1927 and agreed to lower the U.S. interest rates and the Fed's discount rate. Additionally, in July 1927, the directors of the Bank of England, the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and the German Reichsbank plotted to move the gold out of the U.S., all that gold that was funneled in from all over the world. They moved it out of the U.S., and allegedly this helped to generate the Depression. Excuse me. By 1928, about $500 million in gold was transferred to Europe, particularly Germany, under the guise of post-war aid. Now, there were several other aid programs. There was the Dawes Plan, the Young Plan, the Marshall Plan, all designed to funnel taxpayer money out of the country and basically to impoverish the taxpayers here. But allegedly, to help post-war Europe. By 1928, the per capita income grew to $628. And so Winston Churchill, and we wonder, why is Winston Churchill involved in our country? But he was deeply involved in our country, including the 1929 crash.
In fact, I think people have to really understand about Winston Churchill. He's always had a good publicity. He's always, of course, been highly praised. Winston Churchill was a Druid. You know what the Druids are? They're, of course, they were worshippers of the ancient and mystical gods. He was a Mason. He was deeply involved in the occult, and that's why he was always playing a key part in everything, and why he's always had a good press. But, of course, we can't let the American people know that, or we're supposed to believe him as the character that's been created. He was an evil and wicked little man who was responsible for the deaths of literally tens of millions of his own troops and the American troops. Go right ahead.
Anyway, Churchill, Benjamin Strong, and the New York, Benjamin Strong, who was the New York Federal Reserve chief, and Andrew Mellon operated together to ensure that easy money for Wall Street speculation was readily available. And then there were a lot of newspaper and magazine articles that promoted stock market speculation. And they made claims saying, oh, my goodness, you can make a veritable fortune in a short amount of time. And all you have to do is maybe even give $15 a week. Just invest it in the stock market. And, my goodness, within 10 years, you could make lots and lots and lots of money.
And, you know, the world is run by fear and greed. And here they were playing to the greed. And, you know, when you heard the bellhop at the local hotel, you know, who's now suddenly a multimillionaire, if he could make it in the stock market, maybe you could. And so you began to invest in the stock market. And everybody was playing the stock market. And the margins were 10%. Just put down 10%. You can borrow 90%. And the good times are going to roll again, aren't they?
That's right. That's right. But there were a special group of speculators who owned dozens of accounts in various names, and they could trade in huge, huge blocks. Now, the small investors, the common man, was never, ever in a position to manipulate the market. But the small investors are the people who suffered the consequences and receive the blame for the 29 crash.
Let me just say, Brigitte, we're going to have to go to a quick break. If Mike's out there and he wants to call back in, we can take him during the break here. Mike, give us a call at 1-464-8295 if you'd like to go on the air. Well, Deanna, before we go on, do you have anything you'd like to put out, a website or anything of that sort?
Yes, my website is spingola.com. And all of my articles are posted there. And I also just recently signed a contract with Trine Day, so I will be they will be publishing a book, which I am busily writing.
All right, fine. Well, that's very good. All right, hang on. Let's go to Mike and see what he has. Mike, did you have a question or comment? Oh, I guess we didn't press the button there long.
That wonderful exposition with my puny little question.
All right, fine.
When it goes back to the discussion about the government, the people being in control of the government rather than vice versa, maybe 20 minutes or so ago,
mm-hmm.
Remember that part?
Right.
I don't want to seem picayunish, but I think the way that came forth in discussion there has more to do with democracy than a constitutional republic. The point being that in the constitutional republic, the government is controlled by the Constitution and not the people.
Right, you're right, absolutely right.
That's true.
Okay.
And that's something that so few people understand. You know, everybody thinks we live in a democracy when it's antithetical and actually destructive to the republic. And truly, our greatest problems are so closely related to the fact that we have become a democracy.
All right, fine. If we are a republic, and let's try to restore it.
And thanks. As we go about the world, creating democracies everywhere, yep, that's exactly what we're doing, and that's the trouble.
And of course, that was what Manly P. Hall, his book, said. And of course, Manly P. Hall was a Satanist. His book, The Secret Destiny of America, is one of the most important books because it lets us know what the plans were of the occultists. Manly P. Hall, 33rd degree Mason, said to be the leading Masonic philosopher of all time, and also a Satanist. And we have his book. We carry it. In fact, we carry a number of his books, Lectures in Ancient Philosophy, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, his book, of course, The Secret Destiny of America, and his ultimate book entitled Secret Teachings of All Ages, where he tells you how they create their logos, their signs, their symbols, the evidence that they've been there, and they hide them in plain sight, and nobody ever sees.
We're going to have to
let you go, Mike, because we're just about out of time, but God bless you for calling. Our guest has been Deanna Spingola, and of course, you'll be with us again tomorrow night as we'll explore and bring it right up to what's going on today. But do you, hold on for just a minute, Deanna. We do have another caller. Robert is calling us from Spokane, Washington. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. And this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Robert on the line. And Robert, we're just about out of time. Do you have a quick question, though?
Yeah, there's a new book out called Hamilton's Curse, and it was written kind of as an antidote. There's another book called Hamilton's Blessing, but the author says Hamilton basically was a modern-day Federal Reserve banker, central banker type.
Right, of course, but he was working very closely with the European bankers, which they don't tell you. Okay, anything else? Did you have a question for the guest?
Well, have you heard of the book?
No, I haven't. But you have to understand that who published the book?
Thomas DiLorenzo.
I don't know him at all, but Alexander Hamilton was representing the European bankers. Did they tell you that in the book?
I haven't read it yet, but he was very critical of Hamilton.
All right, fine. Well, then, of course,
he was very critical of Abraham Lincoln.
All right, fine. Well, we're out of time, but God bless. Give us a call tomorrow evening, Robert. And right now, we're going to have to let our guest go. Thank you very much, Deanna.
Thank you.
Do you think we have enough information to go for another hour?
Sure.
All right, fine. Then we'll look forward to it. God bless, and thanks so very much.
All righty. Good night.
Bye-bye. And, Chris, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Deanna Spingola, and we'll have her back again tomorrow evening. But she covered so much important information. And if you'd like a review of it, of course, you can get a copy of this tape, or we hope to put this together in a new four-tape set. But even more than that, of course, you can get my pamphlet on the history of money, and we cover a lot of that there. And so you want to hear what Deanna says, and then, of course, read about it and get the sources of reference, because we have a lot of Andrew Jackson's original speeches on the Federal Reserve System. And, of course, it's so vitally important to understand that these people knew exactly what was going on. And they did not understand, however, the spiritual forces behind the banking cabal that, of course, dates back to the time of the ancient Templars. Templars were the first international bankers, and they were, frankly, Luciferians. They tapped into the secret knowledge, of course, when they'd been working on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And, of course, if you doubt that, of course, you can read the writings of Manly P. Hall and his ancient lectures, who tells you that the reason, of course, they had to execute Jacques de Molay, who was arrested, incidentally, on the 13th of October, 1307. Jacques de Molay had to be executed because they tapped into the secret knowledge. And that's what it's all about. And the secret knowledge is, what is the secret? Why you can communicate with their God, who is Lucifer. And when you do, tremendous power is available, but, of course, at a terrible, terrible cost. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have not yet, of course, gotten your long-term storage food, why, we hope you'll give us a call. We hope, of course, you'll go ahead if you need a Berkey water filter, if you need to lay in a supply of health products, give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a catalog. Or if you already have the catalog, do not put off getting that. Get yourself in good financial state. Get out of debt. Understand their spiritual forces. Make sure you have a personal relationship with our Lord. And if you have any question about what you really believe, let me suggest the excellent series by our good friend, Pastor Billy Crone, The Final Countdown. Because Every one of his talks ends with an invitation to come into a personal relationship with the Lord. That the final countdown, part one or part two, or you can get both of them together at a reduced cost, and then we carry his tapes on creation. We carry his tapes on RFID identification. Now, Sydney, he has excellent videos. He has excellent biblical texts which will help you understand what's really going on from a spiritual point of view. For truly, this is a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So our plea to you is, of course, help us get the information out. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. We do hope that you'll go to our website of radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there 9 hours a day. And then please pray. Pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Friday edition of the Power Hour. Yes, ladies and gentlemen.